everybody. Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm glad you could be with us today. If you are listening to the show in real time, I hope all of you fathers out there had a terrific Father's Day. Galloway, you got to pick the movie that your family went to see on Father's Day.
I did. A real Bill Murray zombie movie. That's kind of dad's taste.
Oh, man. Well, I'm glad you had a good day at that. All right. We got a lot to talk about on the show today and a really good panel to do it. And I think I should start by saying one of the reasons the show is particularly pertinent and relevant right now is because we are in the middle of Pride Month, a month when there's particular focus on LGBTQ issues, and we're going to talk about them in the state of Georgia, the progress that's been made, the problems that persist, and then take a look at where we stand on the national landscape in terms of the issues that are of particular concern and interest to the LGBTQ community. With that in mind, we've got Jeff Graham with us. He is the executive director of Georgia Equality, which is the organization. How do you describe, in a couple of sentences, the most important role of Georgia Equality?
Yes, we work to advance fairness, safety, and opportunity for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender communities throughout the state of Georgia and our allies, very specifically people living with HIV and AIDS.
Yeah, and one of the most important roles I don't know if it's one of the most important, but one of the ways that we have interacted over the years is that you have always been an individual, part of an organization that really talks to legislators about various issues down at the state capitol. And Jim, I think it's fair to say that one of the things about Jeff Graham's 11-year tenure now at Georgia Equality is he really knows how to talk to legislators in a way that they get him. In other words, he's not a rabble rouser in the biggest sense of the word.
Oh no, and we can talk about a couple of examples of that happened this session.
All right, that's great. We will. We'll get to that. If you're watching us on Facebook Live, across the table from Jim and Jeff, Representative Park Cannon is with us. You are a state rep from. You represent Atlanta.
I represent the heart of Atlanta in Pride Month, which is the 10th and Piedmont Rainbow Crosswalk.
That's right. That is. So you go all the way down. You're like along Lakewood Freeway, I think, a part of your district.
That's right.
And then comes all the way up to Midtown.
We are looking forward to redistricting.
Is it?
Never wish for that to happen.
Were you the youngest legislator elected to the General Assembly? You were 26 years old?
Our team is proud to get elected at 24 years old.
24?
That's right. Youngest woman still. But really what it means is that young people and new ideas are in the Gold Dome.
Okay. And you are joined today by Matthew Wilson. He's a state rep from Brookhaven. Your district, too, kind of sprawls on a north-south axis, doesn't it?
It's pretty gerrymandered. It's Brookhaven, part of Sandy Springs, part of Chamblee, part of two voters in the city of Atlanta, and the land underneath 285 in Dunwoody.
All right.
No voters.
Yeah. You're an attorney?
I am.
And you are, how many gay and lesbian legislators do we now have at the state capitol?
We have five.
There's
five
of you.
We're all in the state house.
And so there's you two, you and Park. Who else is in that group?
On the gals team, yeah. We've also got Representative Renita Shannon from Decatur, as well as DeKalb Chairwoman Carla Jenner.
Okay.
And Sam Park from Lawrenceville.
Right. Okay. So let's start, Jim Galloway, with some breaking news that happened about middle of this morning. The Supreme Court is getting down to the last couple weeks of its session, and so they're issuing rulings pretty quickly. Today, they had another opportunity to act on public accommodation as a contrast to religious liberty. Another baker, this time in Oregon, who refused to make a custom wedding cake for a lesbian couple who came to him. And as they did in Colorado, they made a ruling, but they made it on such narrow grounds that it didn't establish any precedence. Once again, the easiest way to describe this is to say the court took a pass on definitive ruling on gay rights as opposed to religious liberty.
Yeah, they kicked the can on the balance between LGBT rights to walk into a store and to purchase, to rent, to have a pure business transaction, and the right of a merchant because of religious reasons to refuse that service.
What do we make of this, Matthew? At what point do you expect that the Supreme Court is going to have to say something more definitive about this whole contrast between so-called religious liberties and public accommodation?
Well, I think part of what we can see from the silence of the Supreme Court is that they clearly see a lot of parallels between this and the civil rights movement and the battle really that the civil rights pioneers had within public accommodation, saying, look, if you're going to put your business, your art, if you consider your cake to be your art, if you're going to put that into the stream of commerce, well, hey, welcome to the community. There are some certain guidelines that we abide by here.
Park, you're nodding as you heard him say that.
Absolutely, because we've been working on this issue for the past 4 years that I've been elected and many years before then. This year, though, we had the leader of our caucus pre-file House Bill 19, which explicitly writes sexual orientation and gender identity into public accommodations, but we got no hearing. So we are a little frustrated with the silence of legislative bodies and of courts, but as Representative Wilson said, this is something that we'll have to keep pushing on.
Jeff, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, you know, clearly the Supreme Court is not there yet. I do think it's important to recognize that in their next term, so we don't know the dates of when this will be, but I think by June of next year, hopefully we will have decided if current federal law under the provisions of sex discrimination in employment, if that protects people on sexual orientation and gender identity. So we do have a big Supreme Court case coming up to them in the next term. I think that they, you know, clearly are conflicted on this issue of religious exemptions. The important thing that I take away from the ruling is that they have not in any way, shape, or form said that there has to be broad religious exemptions in public accommodations law. And so I would say that in some ways that is a bit of a limited victory at this point in time, especially when you have an administration on the national level that is aggressively pushing this concept of broad religious exemptions as it comes to technically public accommodations, but I would say it'd be more in terms of public services.
All right, Bill, before we went on air, we were talking about the another development on this that actually broadens the issue and which might kind of refocus, and that is in South Carolina. You know, in Georgia, we have had some battles over adoption law and the ability of certain foster care organizations or adoption agencies to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. Well, over in South Carolina, they've got a situation where they've got an adoption law that protects agencies on the when they discriminate on the basis of religion. You've got agencies that will not deal with Catholic couples or with Jewish couples, and you know that broadens the public accommodation debate to a level where I think a whole lot of people can buy in.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. I wanted to mention the Supreme Court decision today, or non-decision, I guess we can say, and we'll watch to see how it develops. But let's move on. And let's start, Matthew, if I can start with you, because you contacted me some time ago and said, you know, we've had some real successes on the issues that matter to our community in the legislature this session. And although there are some real looming problems out there, I think the successes are of interest. And as I turn to you on this, let me point out something interesting. Some of the things we're going to talk about today, you two are Democrats, you and Park Cannon. But we asked a couple of Republicans, Chuck F. Strachan and Burt Reeves, to come in today. Neither of them were available. But the reason I mention them now is that both of them kind of reflect what may be a changing point of view, at least among some Republicans at the General Assembly. You got help from them on some of these issues. So what do you think are the most important victories that the community got, Matthew?
You know, I think first we have to point out that these are marginal victories, and that is what we're unfortunately used to in the LGBT community from the Georgia legislature. But these are worth celebrating and showing sort of where we've come. And first, I think you have to highlight the fact that we really had no real effort to push RFRA legislation. It really stalled in committee in the Senate. And I think part of that was because of the governor leaning on the bill author and the judiciary chair over there to kill that bill.
Do you think that Governor Kemp did not want to see that bill see the light of day?
I think so. Okay. You know, and this is, again, I'm a freshman Democrat, so this is all pure speculation.
I would agree there, but I would say it was in the context of the accompanying heartbeat bill.
Exactly.
That Kemp didn't want to see both of those up in the air at the same time.
Right. Yeah, you don't have any reason, Jeff, to think that RFRA is gone for good, do you?
I don't believe that it's gone for good right now. But I certainly would agree with Representative Wilson that I think that we have seen a real turning of the corner, especially in the House. I think that the Senate is a different beast at this point in time. But I think definitely this session at the House, we did see a turning of the corner. And frankly, again, as Representative Cannon had mentioned, it's been years in the making. So before we had gotten into this kind of annual debate around religious exemptions, how broad they should be, who gets included, who doesn't get included, we actually, when we were talking about a bill back in 2012, 13, and 14 about protecting state employees against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, we actually had gotten 19 Republicans on the House side to co-sponsor that bill, and every single Democrat. So that bill was really moving ahead at lightning speed until this divisive issue of religion came up.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because I kind of keep track of what people are saying on social media. And I think it's interesting that the listeners right now seem to think that issues involving this community are partisan one way or the other, that it's all Democrat and Republican divide. Park, that's really not the case at this point, is it?
Oh, it's certainly not. And even as we brought up the bill that bans abortion, this affects the LGBTQ community as well. For people who are gender nonconforming, for people who are transitioning genders, these are issues of reproductive health. And so we were happy to see another legislative success that Kemp did sign into law, which is House Bill 290. It's a bill that we sponsor to create a pilot program so that if you are not yet living with HIV, you can receive services and medication so that your body will never be able to live with HIV, which is called PrEP. And what we hope is that we'll continue to use other small resolutions, like we did House Resolution 822, which honors the Stonewall Inn movement at 50 years, and other resolutions honoring community members that will chip away at the stigma about the LGBTQ community being outside of the rest of the community.
PrEP. Talk about PrEP for a minute, Matthew. It's because that, too, again, that was Kay Kirkpatrick, another Republican who advanced that measure. What does her bill, now signed into law, do to help fight off HIV, which we know Georgia has a particularly difficult problem.
Right. And I think that context is very important for this particular issue because Fulton County, but really the Metro Atlanta area, has what the CDC has called an epidemic of new HIV infections, putting us on similar ranking scales to third world Africa. It's really an embarrassment.
There are some zip codes in Atlanta, I know, which have a higher rate of HIV infection than some of the African countries that we tend to stereotypically think right. are where HIV lives in the most dominant ways. Right. Now, that's not to say this is a problem that's only in the gay and lesbian community.
No.
Far from that
no,
at this
right.
point.
Right. But this pilot program and the medication at the center of it, PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis is what PrEP is an acronym for. But the pill is really a wonder drug that is, I believe it's 97 or 98% effective at preventing the transmission of HIV. And when you think about, in order to stem this tide, we have to prevent new infections. And that's what this medication does. It also is incredibly helpful for partnerships where one partner is HIV positive, but the other partner is not.
That's right. So this is a pilot program. It goes to 5 counties in the state of Georgia over 3 years. So we do need a little bit of money in order to do this. And we'll have to go back next year in order to fiscally sponsor this bill. But it allows for community service boards in North Georgia, in the Speakers County, and large departments of health like Fulton County to work together to coordinate their strategies when it comes to those who are either becoming HIV positive because they're injecting medication and using same needles or because of sex.
Jim, and Bill, go ahead, if I could just for a moment, sure. I think that this, though, is really critical. So first of all, you know, I mean, it's hats off to Representative Cannon. She's been really carrying the water on this issue for years, and it shows how she has really matured and become incredibly effective as a state representative to be able to work across party lines to push important legislation like the PrEP legislation forward. I do think it also, I'm going to push back a little bit, that, sure. that yes, you know, within Metro Atlanta, it is all communities and demographics that are affected by HIV and AIDS. But it's very specific that we have a horrendous epidemic that is going on amongst young, Black, gay and bisexual men okay. and transgender women of color. And so, getting a measure like PrEP through the legislature doesn't just begin to bring additional resources to bear on an epidemic that helps all Georgians. So that's critical. It is helping all Georgians. But it is also very specifically helping our community.
Okay.
Because our community is in the greatest need right now. And I think it shows how HIV as an issue can bridge understanding about our lives, our families, our health, by connecting it to other communities that exist out there to show that LGBT lives and LGBT issues don't necessarily live in a box by themselves over on the side.
Thank you for that. Jim?
Yeah, if I could build on I think Matthew's point that this, you know, we've got a bipartisan thing going
yeah.
over here. We've always had a bipartisan thing going. I mean, if you go back to 2004, which is probably the nadir of the LGBT movement in Georgia, when two-thirds of the legislature voted to put the ban on same-sex marriage into the state constitution. The Republicans did that by peeling off Democratic votes. And now we've got this kind of the same over just a period of 15 years, a mirror image of that happening, because you've got Democrats all on one side on the LGBT issue, but you're making a lot of progress, especially among younger Republicans. And I guess what my question for you three here is what's needed to help the GOP come out of that closet, if you will, because they're clearly you have people willing to help you if they don't have to come out publicly.
I think it shows up in economics. I went to school for liberal arts, but I know that many of those who are focusing on our state's economy are speaking up right now on how, if we are to push back and stop the progress for LGBTQ equality and equity, because equity is a whole nother conversation we almost can't even get to yet, you have to hit them in the pockets. And so looking at what happens if the Final Four decides that they're not coming, what happens if other organizations who are based here are saying, we're picking up and moving, or we're pushing back on you. So I would say hit them in the pockets.
Yeah, I would agree with it. You know, in fact, there was just another business study that came out looking at the business environment here in Georgia from an LGBTQ perspective. And we ended up with, again, a pretty bad score, 45.3. We ranked 38th out of 50 states.
This is from
Out Leadership.
Which, tell us what that organization is very quickly.
So, yeah, they're a national organization, actually an international organization that works with CEOs, other C-suite executives looking at business and economic issues from an LGBTQ lens. So certainly those business arguments, I think, are important. I think, though, that's only scratching a bit of the surface. I think what you're also seeing is as more denominations, faith traditions, embrace, actively embrace and affirm the humanity of LGBTQ folks, that changes perceptions, because you then have Republican legislators that are hearing about inclusion in Sundays at the pulpit. I think as well as, seeing the shift that is happening amongst their own constituents, because I'm a little bit older than the representatives here, but growing up, it was such a shame on a family to come out. And while that still happens today, I don't want to sugarcoat it. It does still happen today, but it doesn't happen to the levels it did before. And you're seeing this happen in families in the suburbs, in families in small towns, in families that have Republican elected officials in them. So it's the sons, daughters, brothers, sisters of a lot of the folks down at the Capitol, and more it's becoming a very personal issue for them.
I think one example of that was, he's not with the legislature anymore, but remember Alan Peake? Mm-hmm. Who was the state rep out of Macon, who was pushing, who pushed medicinal marijuana. I mean, his brother is gay and is out, and it made those votes very, very difficult for him.
So let's go back. We're going to have to get to a break in a minute, but Jeff, you mentioned the Out Leadership report on the business climate in Georgia, and you sent me a copy of their latest figures. And let me just go to one point on here. As you say, we don't fare very well, but this leads to one conversation I want to have before we go to break. In youth and family support, we got about half of the number that you should get. We're at 10.3 out of 20. And the first thing it says is that Georgia does not ban conversion therapy. The programs which attempt to take people who identify as gay, lesbian, transgender, whatever, and convert them into heterosexuality. You've been working on that one, Matthew, and you got down the road, but not all the way there this last session.
That's right, and we saw a lot of bipartisan support, actually. It was House Bill 580, bill that would ban conversion therapy among licensed medical professionals in the state. So if you get your medical license from Georgia, this would ban you from being able to engage in conversion therapy. And we really had a coalition, not just of the LGBTQ community, but also the medical community. Every major medical association in America has come out against conversion therapy and has taken steps within each of the different professional groups, the psychiatrists, the psychologists, the social workers, to stop this practice internally. But now they have come to state legislatures, and they're going state by state asking for laws on the books to get rid of this, because ultimately it's the state that issues the medical license. And so we had a committee hearing in the House this year. We did not have a vote. I did not ask for a vote. I just wanted a public hearing this year to really get this issue out on the table and sort of lower the stakes a little bit and allow legislators to have a free dialogue with the witnesses that we have.
Yeah, I'm always looking for motivation here. Is there a liability issue that professionals face when they engage in that kind of behavior?
They can, certainly, because if the professional association itself has said, we do not recognize this as sound medical science, then if you're engaging in that, you can convince a court that you're engaging in medical malpractice.
All right, let's do this. We've got to get to our first break of the show. Obviously, a lot more to talk about. We'll get to that after a break. This is Political Rewind.
Now is the perfect time to clean out the garage and get rid of that car you no longer need. You'll face the coming months with a fresh start, and by donating your used car to GPB, you'll even get a tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
I'm gonna get in my car. Ooh, drive away. Ooh, drive so far.
In the Pacific Northwest, there's growing concern over the number of deaths in county jails. Many of those deaths are from suicide.
We have people who are very sick in our facilities and we don't know how to deal with them. And because we don't know how to deal with them, they're dying.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, trying to prevent suicide behind bars this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today here on GPB and gpbnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. There was one big issue. Jeff Graham, I'm going to play a little sound in a second here, but, you know, Jim Galloway proposed that that we're becoming more and more bipartisan in how we deal with issues that affect the LGBTQ community. And, of course, in many ways, that is certainly true. But there are some issues where there really is a partisan divide, for the most part, although it was a Republican who this year sponsored a hate crimes bill that would have included protections for the gay and lesbian community. Chuck Evstration, let's listen to just a little of what he said when he introduced his bill.
Hate can be used as a tool for evil in order to undermine the law and order that we take for granted many times in our society. Then this bill is absolutely needed. If you honestly search your heart and you conclude that you want your children and your grandchildren to grow in a society where overt acts of hate are not tolerated, then this bill is needed.
So, Jeff, this was a breakthrough, and here's why. You and I go back a long way on hate crimes issues, back to the days when I was at the Anti-Defamation League. And we both know that for years, legislators told us they would be glad to pass a hate crimes bill if it excluded protections for gays and lesbians, because they did not want to codify that. So for a Republican, and those were Republicans mostly who said that, for a Republican now to come forward and propose this bill, it still failed, but I thought that would... The hate crimes bill?
Oh, no, no, it passed the House. It's in the Senate.
Well, I mean, my point is, it failed. Okay, I thank you for that. It's still alive for the next session, the biennial session, but I... would propose, but the Senate wasn't eager to take it up, is a better way to say it.
Well, but it is. I mean, again, I think that of all the issues, that is the one that really shows how far we've come, at least in the House.
Yeah.
And sexual orientation was there. It was also gender was included in that. So it was not the preferred term of gender identity that we would prefer. But clearly, in the conversations we've had at the committee level, as well as just the legal precedent that is there, that gender is inclusive of transgender individuals as well. So it I think is an important point of this, that it was the full LGBTQ community covered through this, and it was not as narrow a vote as I would have anticipated, to be honest with you. You know, it passed with a very comfortable margin. Frankly, I think that it shows hope for the future. It again shows some of the challenges that we face in the Senate. And so this is where I do think, part of the complication is that representation really does matter. That, you've had Carla Drenner down for 20 years educating folks. And now as we have brought on Renita Shannon and Park Cannon and Matthew Wilson and Sam Park, each of them now are on different committees. They are speaking with their colleagues. It gets much harder to see LGBT people as completely other and something that you don't have to deal with when you have to sit in committees with them, when you have to take votes with them, when you have to be in debates with them. And I think, certainly that Representative Wilson and Representative Cannon are well poised to speak to that.
Well, and I think it's interesting, we're sitting here in the context of Pride, and in particular, this Pride is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall uprising. And I listened to a podcast a couple of weeks ago that talked about how the LGBTQ movement has really covered more ground in shorter period of time than any other really progressive movement that we've seen in our lifetimes. And part of the reason, the theory of this podcast was, part of the reason was because, unlike race or ethnicity, when you look at a person, you can't tell what their sexual orientation is. You may have an inkling of what their gender identity may be. But when the gay liberation movement started and people said, okay, I'm going to come out and damn the consequences, whatever they may be. But it's important that people know this is who I am. And you start seeing, you know, you have gay members in your family. You have transgender members in your church. At work, you start seeing how pervasive the LGBT community is, and how truly the issues that affect our community truly affect all Georgians.
So you may have progress. Who knows what the Senate will do with hate crimes next session? But you know, they're much more conservative at this point than the House is. Park, the other thing, though, that we don't have in Georgia is any kind of civil rights bill that protects, or law that protects many communities of people beyond just the LGBTQ community. And there doesn't, to the best of my knowledge, seem to be any progress on that here.
Unfortunately, you know, in the House, we have been stalled on this issue. When we pre-file a piece of legislation, that means that it's one of the first bills that can possibly be introduced and then considered in committee. And so we do see it as being indicative of the chambers or the leadership's ideologies around including LGBTQ people or just people in general, in public accommodations, in fair housing, in workplace accommodations. And so what we really need is for Georgia, for you to reach out. We need more stories. We need to contextualize this.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about that, Jim, is we hear people say when RFRA comes up, which it certainly will inevitably do again next session, if and not beyond that, one of the things that we hear from the advocates of RFRA is, well, there's already a federal RFRA law. And it was put in place by a Democratic administration, true enough. But there's also a federal civil rights law that counterbalances that. Georgia has not got that counterbalance.
And I think every year that religious liberty legislation comes out, there is an offer from people like Jeff, right, to say, okay, we'll do this, mm-hmm, but we want accompanying civil rights protections that will give us the security that we need. And that bargain is never taken up.
Absolutely. Right. That and or an amendment that has a non-discrimination clause. Mm-hmm. We would be able to do that. There are options that the House and the Senate leadership is stalling on. And in 2020, we know that voters are going to vote their beliefs first, but second of all, how people who have been elected have been treating them, and stalling LGBTQ members of our community out on their ability to work in a place or live somewhere safe is not going to bode well.
And I just want to highlight one more bill also. The author, Chuck F. Strachan from Gwinnett County, who sponsored the hate crimes bill this year, also sponsored HB 543, which was an equitable caregiver bill. That bill went all the way to the governor's desk, and he signed it into law.
Explain to everybody what that does.
This bill for couples, whether they be married or not, who adopt children, and only one parent legally adopts the child. And you know, maybe they're
or
together
at the
time. Or you
have an instance where you have a biologic parent.
Correct.
And a non-biological parent.
And a non-biological parent. But where one spouse does not have a biological right to the child, or a legal right because they haven't adopted that child. And then the marriage or relationship dissolves, that person who may have spent 20 years helping raise the child has no legal right, or had no legal right, to that child, and now this would allow that person to go to a court and show a court that they have they deserve a right.
Jeff, Jim Galloway pointed out on our show last week that is a victory for anybody who has a situation with adopted children, including gay couples. But he also pointed out that Mary Margaret Oliver, who sponsored that legislation, sort of snuck it in under the radar that this, in fact, would be a benefit for gay and lesbian couples. It was assumed this was really about straight couples who have this adoption issue to deal with.
Well, I think it echoes what I had said earlier, that you can have a victory for an LGBT community. that can be a victory for other people.
There you go.
And it is more frankly than a soundbite or a political strategy. It is really true.
This is a stepfather's bill, essentially. I think that's who it affects.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go on and go ahead and take another point from the Out Leadership report on Georgia's business climate to get to another issue, Jeff. Work environment and employment, we score, according to them, a 13 out of 20. Health, I'm going to get to that in a minute, but what I really want to address first is health access and safety, where we're a 5 out of 20. Georgia state Medicaid system specifically excludes transgender health care, and private insurers are allowed to do the same. Where do we stand with that? Transgender is the next frontier that the whole country is facing in terms of these rights.
Yeah, very, very clearly. So, you know, as bleak as it is for gay, lesbian, and bisexual folks, it is more bleak for transgender folks here in Georgia. There is another organization that does kind of state-by-state comparison of legislation. And in that Movement Advancement Project is that group. And we actually are one of only 6 states with a negative score there. And one of the reasons that we have a negative score is that the bar for transgender individuals to change their gender markers on their driver's licenses is higher than it is in the majority of other states. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, that's a basic quality of, not just quality of life issue, it's a life issue. You have to present your ID to vote. To get your right, your basic right to vote in Georgia, you have to present an ID. And transgender individuals, by the best estimate, 90% of them do not have an ID that matches their gender presentation. Imagine what that is like every time you go to a bar and you're asked for your ID, wondering if the server is going to be hostile and discriminate against you. The poll workers, will you be denied your ability to cast a vote? Mm-hmm. This is a basic issue of life. And we can't even do that for the transgender community. So yes, it is clearly the next area.
Matthew?
I was just going to provide an anecdote, a perfect story that illustrates this. You know, we've been talking about 481 and the anti-abortion fallout, and really how Georgians are repulsed at how the state now is controlling the bodies of women, right? But essentially, let's be careful about this. But that's exactly what the law does for transgender individuals to be able to change their gender markers. I belong to the Stonewall Bar Association, which is the Gay Lawyers Association here in Georgia, and last year we gave an award to 2 transgender young adults. They were in their early 20s in college, who both had sought to change their name in Augusta. The judge would not let them change their name because he said, "You look like a woman, and I don't care if you want a male name. Right. That's confusing. We're not going to let you do that." That was later overturned by the Court of Appeals. But these two individuals made new law in Georgia. We tried to we gave them an award for that. But between the time that we gave them award and we had the dinner, one of those individuals had a hysterectomy, a gender reassignment surgery, and died because of it. This is when we require individuals to have surgery like this. We are literally putting their lives at risk, and it costs this particular person her life.
So I want to take a step back from the legalities of all this and talk about this on a cultural level. And I recognize that at any minute, as I give you my statement, one of you may get up and want to kick me out of the studio. Matthew said a while ago that Jim, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, all of you, really. But so Matthew, you said a little while ago that there's very few issues of social justice that have moved as quickly as has LGBTQ issue. I mean, the fact that gay marriage is now the law of the land is a remarkable thing. It's turned very quickly. I mean, it strikes me that it was 10 years ago that people were still very uncomfortable with all of this. And I wonder if transgender issues, if having accomplished gay marriage. If suddenly when the frontier turns to transgender individuals and their rights and their needs, if there doesn't need to be a cultural movement that understands what that's like. I didn't get that. I now have three friends whose children are transgender and are going through sex changes. Until that, this was a completely foreign landscape to me. So I wonder, Jim, do you get what I'm saying? That sometimes it's the culture and the laws have to move in some kind of parallel way. It's not a question of denying rights to all people, but we as a society need to, the temperature, we've got to understand what's happening.
Yeah, no, I will agree that it happens. I mean, my daughters have transgender friends. You know, and it's not a big deal. I can't remember that I had one growing up. But on the other hand, I would also say that as a concept, transgender is far, has a history of hundreds of years more acceptance than straight LGBT acceptance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go back to Shakespeare, and it's hard to find a play that doesn't engage in gender swapping roles, especially the comedy.
Yep, Park?
I would agree with you, Jim, because what we've seen is that whether you are transgender or not, when there is a community around you that is able to say, this is who you are, and to stand up for you when you are coming to the state capitol and showing your state ID to enter. If my staff person, who I'm the only legislator who has a trans person on my staff, if she greets you at the front desk, you feel a little bit different. You feel a little bit more safe. And there's a community of culture around you in which you know whether or not the pitch in your voice sounds the way that the state trooper wants to hear, you are validated. What we also know is that there are so many cultures around the world that already understand gender fluidity. These are Native American groups who have, of course, existed well before many Anglo people did in America. These are Indian groups that understand their own beings of religion, their own goddesses and gods are of two spirits.
I don't have to go across, around the world, Jeff Graham, to find this. My 22-year-old daughter talks about gender in language that it's taken me a long time to understand. But you have always been someone who understood the need for society to catch up on these.
Yeah, I actually think your point about culture is very valid, but I actually think that is happening.
Oh, I do too. I think it's in
big and public ways.
Yeah.
I think for a mainstream America, Caitlyn Jenner is probably the best example of that. So a sports hero that so many of us that are a little bit older grew up with, in some ways of the epitome of masculinity, to realize that Caitlyn had been living her entire life as a lie.
Yeah.
And to then see kind of the backlash that she went through as she transitioned in a very public way. But you have shows like Pose that are very popular, that are more firmly rooted in all aspects, from the writers and the directors to the performers and clearly the stories of the transgender community. And I think and not just the transgender community, but specifically transgender women of color in New York in the 80s. And it's a different way of framing the important history of HIV and AIDS in this country by focusing in on a group of people that were left behind, left out of the stories as we were telling them.
I got to get to a break, but Matthew, to go back full circle on this, it seems to me that we might say that the advances made by the gay and lesbian community in people understanding and accepting are making our ability to reach out and say we understand transgender individuals much more, the progress can come more quickly.
I think so too, and I think part of the hesitation that does remain among a lot of people who may not know transgender individuals is the fear of being politically incorrect and offending someone. And you've really just got to set that aside and just lean in and with your curiosity and ask the questions. And as long as you're coming from a place of curiosity and acceptance, you're always going to be received well.
Got to take a final break of the show. When we come back, I'd love to talk about Stonewall Inn for a few minutes, because that's where it all really began moving the culture forward. This is Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air, the unique medical needs of older adults. Terry talks with geriatrician Louise Aronson, author of the new book Elderhood, about what it means to live longer and to be on more medications. Aronson describes the challenges of helping elders in her own family and flaws in the current healthcare system. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 here on GPB and gpbnews.org.
My name is Diamandis Papadopoulos. I am the medical director at Metroderm. Metroderm is a dermatology / dermatologic surgical practice in Atlanta with 18 providers. I wanted to participate in underwriting for public radio. The integrity of what I was listening to made me feel like I wanted to be part of that message, and that represented us, and it was something I felt very positive about doing.
To find out more about becoming a corporate sponsor, email sponsorship@gpb.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Jim Galloway with me, because it's Monday. Park Cannon and Matthew Wilson, two state representatives from Brookhaven. In Matthew Wilson's case, Park Cannon is Atlanta. And Jeff Graham, the director, executive director of Georgia Equality. We're coming up on a big anniversary, Jeff. June 28th, 1969, the Stonewall Police. It's called a riot, and essentially it was a police action that was met with force. Tell us just a bit about what was Stonewall and why it was so important.
Yeah, so for close to 100 years, in New York City and frankly everywhere around the country, it was illegal for LGBT folks to gather publicly, to gather in people's homes. And it was not uncommon for police to take action. These raids happened on a regular and consistent basis. It was clearly harassment of the community.
By the moral squad.
By the moral squad. And what's really important for folks to know is that this was not just being rounded up and having to bail out. Folks who got caught up in these raids, their photos were published in newspapers, their families and employers were notified. This often left to people losing their jobs, being disgraced from their families, and in who knows how many instances it actually led to suicide, because folks felt that that was their only option. And so on June 28th, in the early mornings, led primarily by trans women of color, drag queens, young sex workers, the most marginalized of the marginalized, the police came to round them up.
Stonewall Inn was a dive.
It was a dive bar.
Horrible dive, but it became the center of gay activity.
That's right.
In New York.
Absolutely. And they fought back, and they did not go peacefully. They were still arrested, but they did not go peacefully. And so then folks gathered the next night. And the crowd grew, and the next night, and the crowd grew. Over the next six nights, the crowds grew in New York City. And so that became an important point of resistance. There had been actions, there had been organizations building for 15 years before that. And that history is important to recognize as well. We had 15,000 federal employees that lost their jobs during the Lavender Scare of the 50s and the 60s. But this sparked a movement.
What were some of the leaders? Who were some of the leaders that grew out of Stonewall?
Sylvia Rivera.
Yeah. The Gay Liberation Front.
The Gay Liberation Front. It was really that people continued to organize. I think that that's where it became an important function. And we don't do a good job of honoring our heroes, honoring our heritage. I think a lot of the names are lost, unfortunately, to history. People gathered the next year to recognize that. And that's when we really knew we had a movement that was going on. And that's what the Pride celebrations started as, which now happens around the world. And it happens at different times of the year. So Atlanta's Pride celebration is now in October during LGBTQ History Month. And when it's a little bit nicer to be outside for 2 days. But there's a spirit of June that is now embraced by corporate America to kind of get back a little bit to the corporate culture. I do so many speaking engagements. My entire staff, our organization, is out really interacting with folks to tell the story of Stonewall, but more importantly, to talk about what is going on in our community today.
Park, Stonewall was... I have heard people say, in fact, there's a documentary on PBS about Stonewall, and one of the people interviewed who was at Stonewall on that first night said, in many ways, it was like the moment when Rosa Parks said, I will not sit in the back of the bus.
Absolutely, and we're still doing it today, which is why I'm so proud that we're talking about Stonewall here in Georgia, because we've had similar things happen. The Atlanta Eagle was raided in the 90s and 2000s. People were still coming back to say, this is what happened to us. This is why we fight for our equality and we bring our visibility forward, because whether or not we perish or are harmed by those who do not believe that we deserve the right to live full and healthy lives, we are still going to put ourselves on the front line. And we want you to bring that to the state capitol. We know that we have not yet been able to host a major event, but we did commend the Stonewall's uprising in state law this year.
Galloway, I love the way that Park Cannon, nobody's ever used this show quite the way to like rally people to turn out. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I think I just heard a message that someone wants to use Liberty Plaza.
Yeah. Matthew, I have to share with you. I mentioned my daughter, my 22-year-old, a few minutes ago. She called me right before we came on the air. I said, we're going to talk about Stonewall Inn. She lives in New York. She just sent me a photograph. She went to the Stonewall Inn, which today is a very dressed-up looking place. It's right. Got a big sign above it that says proudly pouring the Stonewall Inn IPA. So Emma just sent that to me a few minutes ago.
Well, and the Stonewall Inn is now a national park.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It is now part of our national heritage, which again, I can't begin to express as a gay man of a certain age, to know that we are part of the national story, which we should be.
Jim Galloway, it's really remarkable for you and me, too. I mean, we've been around for a very long time at the Capitol to see, again, the bipartisan changes that have happened to a community that struggled for so long to get recognized as deserving of all these rights.
You know, in political terms, it's for me, it's been like a lightning strike.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I was there back in the early 2000s, and it was... You know, I have had Carla Drenner sit in front of me and tell me about people refusing to get into elevators with her.
Mm-hmm. I got
back in the day.
So the changes of I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm really running out of time. Real quickly, one of you let me know about this. Melita Easters comes in here as a Democrat, talks about recruiting women to run who are pro-choice, Democratic women. Julianne Thompson comes in, talks about trying to recruit Republican women to run for the legislature. What about recruiting gay, lesbian, transgender candidates to run for the legislature? Is there a similar movement? You got about 10 seconds to tell
me. Yes, absolutely. It happens. It's incredible. Important. A lot of it is happening on the local level, school boards, city councils, county commissions, but it is also happening at the state legislature and the state senate as well.
We are completely out of time.
Atlanta Pride is October 13th.
Okay.
Happy Pride, everyone.
Oh, now somebody else using the show to get a crowd turned out. Matthew Wilson, Park Cannon, Jeff Graham, Jim Galloway, I'll see you again on Political Rewind on Friday, and I'll see the rest of you here tomorrow at 2 for another edition of our show. Take care.